Welcome to San Francisco City Insider, the San Francisco Chronicle podcast on the people and politics making headlines in the city by the bay. I'm Chronicle columnist Heather Knight, and I'm here today with John Porter, vice president of Recology, which collects San Francisco's trash. We're talking today about the city's incredibly dirty streets and some changes Recology is trying to make to help keep them cleaner. John Porter, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
I apologize if I'm tired this morning. I was out late last night on a ride-along with some of your garbage collectors in the Tenderloin, so that was quite an eye-opening experience.
I heard you did a great job.
It was fun. I just wanted to compliment you also on how hardworking that team is. Yeah, very hard job.
Bobby and Ron are two of our best, and, you know, they work really hard, and they're proud in that area that they serve in the Tenderloin, and I look at them and pick them for your ride along because I knew they'd be very helpful and, and help you understand what they go through and how hard they are working.
So. Yeah, very enthusiastic too. I wanted to start by talking about zero waste. That was a goal set back in 2003 by the mayor at the time, that nothing would go to landfills by 2020. And I know that was revised last year because it was not achievable. We're just about at 2020 now. I just looked at the controller's scorecard, and it says that in September, 53% of waste from homes and small businesses in the city was recycled or composted, and 47% went to landfill. Why do you think getting to zero waste is so hard to achieve?
That's a great question. I don't know that it's always been an aspirational goal, you know, just like Vision Zero, you know, it zero is an aspiration that we're all trying to achieve. We are investing heavily in the infrastructure. Last year, we built a new organics transfer station where our materials, all the compost is taken in the city and transferred to a composting facility near Modesto, and we outgrew the old facility. I mean, we started the program, I think we're doing 300 tons a day. Now we're over 700, 800 tons a day of compost material in San Francisco. So it's been growing. You know, with that, that stream has actually been a raging success, and I think that that is you know, something that we're the envy of other cities. They don't have an organics program like we do in San Francisco. The recycling side is a little more challenging in the sense that the materials that you know, people are creating today mixed plastic and paper. You get, you know, you order a product and it's got a paper backer with plastic wrapping over it. It's very difficult to unlock that paper from that plastic. And so one of the things that, you know, our CEO has, you know, pushed on and had written a letter to the plastics industry on kind of producer responsibility and looking to simplify those materials and focusing on reuse and recycling. So that's one of the challenges of that. And then in terms of getting to zero, you know, our greatest opportunity that people don't realize is actually probably in construction and demolition. There's a lot of waste that goes into, you know, tearing down buildings and then building new buildings on top of them. And so we're right now working with the planning department on entitling a new construction and demolition facility, which should help us increase our capacity for construction and demolition waste by about 50%, but then also increase the recovery that we're getting from that material by 50%. And then, you know, lastly, I think we've made a lot of headway, but still there's some challenging pockets that we haven't quite been able to reach. Multifamily environments where people are living in large apartment buildings have one you know, a place where their trash goes and they're not maybe offered recycling compost. We have an outreach program working with apartment buildings on education. We go door to door, tell the residents, you know, how to recycle and compost. And we work with the building management to provide equal and adequate access to all streams. And we're having a lot of success with that. I think we saw like an average of 20% increase of recycling and compost in the multifamily buildings that we worked with. So we're going to continue working with them on that.
Does all the online ordering happening now contribute to more more waste? Some of it just has so much packaging when you order like one little object from
Amazon. Yeah, the stat that I read about a year ago is that ordering something from Amazon requires 8 times more packaging than buying it from a store.
Wow.
That was a little bit of a – that's an older stat, you know, about a year old. But if you think about, you know, the large cardboard boxes that come to a store, you know, having a lot of objects in them, you know, a lot of paper towels, for example, it holds, you know, probably 20 customers worth of paper towels. And you get one paper towel in the Amazon and it comes in a box that's twice as big as the paper towels. It doesn't seem like a you know, a really great way of packaging that. But, you know, that – as long as they're using cardboard, that is a valuable commodity that can be recycled and is actually very desirable. You know, especially American cardboard has long fibers that other countries want because they can turn it into cardboard again and then, you know, downgrade it to paper and then tissue paper. So there's a lot of reuse capability of cardboard. The products, they call them blister pack, which are kind of you know, new envelopes that have the kind of poppy, you know, those are challenging to recycle. Film plastic markets are not quite as robust as other types of material like cardboard. And so, you know, our preference would be having these companies focus on products that have a good end of life that can be reused or recycled would be our preference.
And there's been a lot of news recently about how China shut down its market and is not accepting recyclables anymore. How is Recology coping with that?
So San Francisco is a success story. You know, you see the in the news nearly every day, this county or this municipality is cutting down the amount of products they're accepting in the recycling program. You know, in the face of that, what you know people in our industry call a crisis, we actually expanded the commodities that we accept in the recycling bin. And we actually provided every single family home with a larger recycling bin and a smaller trash can. So over the last 2 years, we've offered every single resident a 16-gallon trash, which traditionally is 32-gallon, and a 64-gallon recycling, which traditionally that was also 32 gallons of recycling. And we had about 74% of San Franciscans say yes to that program, which would reduce the amount of material sent to landfill by about 10% and increase recycling by the same percentage. And you know, during that very time, we've invested in our infrastructure. We've added, you know, we've traveled to Las Vegas and San Diego and into Atlanta and looked at other equipment that we can use to clean up those streams to make our material more marketable. And we installed 3 optical sorters from France that were purpose built for identifying paper and keeping that paper stream clean. The last number I heard a few days ago is our last test was at 0.5% contamination in our paper, which is incredible. And so, you know, our theory in San Francisco is if you produce a high quality product, it's always going to have a market. And if you invest in the infrastructure to get it there, you're not going to have any issues. And that's proven to be correct. And then about 3 months ago, we integrated 3 what are considered robots, four robots from a company in the Northwest, BHS, that are targeting cleaning up our plastic streams to keep those materials marketable. So it's a dynamic environment. The markets are changing, but we have not had an issue in San Francisco in the area of recycling. It's still a strong program.
Hear more of my conversation with John Porter of Recology after this quick break. I'm back with John Porter of Recology. Last night I saw the new blue bins with the cool new locking devices. Can you explain? I understand they're being piloted. They were rolled out in Hayes Valley and now the Tenderloin.
Yes.
So how do they work and what is your hope for what they'll achieve?
So I want to say about a year and a half ago, working with the mayor and Mohammed Nuru with Public Works, you know, we had a conversation about what can Recology do to kind of help keep the streets clean. And one of the things was abandoned material. We adjusted our collection times. We actually expanded the number of routes that we use to service the city to kind of help keep the city clean. And we saw about a 20% reduction in abandoned waste calls as a result. So that was a positive. But one of the other things that we had seen is loose litter. San Francisco has hills, a lot of hills. Can be windy. There are large, high-traffic commercial corridors. You know, people will, you know, open a lid they see on the street just to recycle the paper in their pocket. And one of the things we noticed was some of the loose litter was coming from these cans. So we thought, well, maybe in an enclosed can that would you know, prevent them from opening if they were tipped over or knocked over or blown over, for example, may help with that, especially on high traffic commercial corridors. So we worked with several vendors. We piloted one can in the Hayes Valley in August. That can, we had got some feedback. We went back to a different vendor, asked them if they can make it specific to San Francisco with some tweaks, and they've done that. That pilot, those cans were delivered in September, and we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from the merchants in that area. And then, you know, we decided to expand it to the Tenderloin. And we did 100 cans in the Tenderloin about a month ago. so far so good, knock on wood. There's less litter around the cans that we're experiencing and seeing. We're documenting every night, mm-hmm. driving through the areas where the cans are, and we're going to order another 1,000 and expand the pilot that should be here in, end of December, mm-hmm. and looking for those high traffic commercial corridors. So
the old version had the padlock right on it, and then this one is actually built into
self-enclosed, correct.
Yeah. So how do people, if it just automatically locks, actually use it during the week, to put stuff in?
The customer has a key. Okay. They can unlock, and it will remain unlocked until they lock it. And then our trucks have the ability to unlock them upon service. So once they lock it, when they put it out on the mm-hmm. curb at night, it will remain locked until we arrive and service that can. So mm-hmm. we don't have any keys. I'm not sure if
it
saw.
It just automatically attaches to the truck.
Yes.
And it unlocks somehow that way.
Correct.
Through magic.
Through magic. Through magic.
And the idea is that people on the street wouldn't be able to break into them.
Break into them, or even if they are knocked over, mm-hmm. they won't open.
Okay.
Right. And so that locking service, I'm not sure if you got to see Bobby or Ron's keys last night.
I did.
Yeah, those bundles can be very, very large.
It's amazing that I can keep track of all those keys.
I know. It's incredible to me as well. And this enables our drivers not to have these keys. Mm-hmm. The customer has a key. We don't have to access it. And that key is actually a four-charge service. The intention of this can, if it works, would to make it be free to the customer since we're no extra work for us.
But right now it's still being charged for?
Not on the pilot areas.
Oh, okay.
We've removed that charge. If they had a locking can before, we've given them the new can. Mm-hmm. But if they had in other areas, if you have locking service, it is an additional charge because mm-hmm. we need to
How much do you pay if you have the padlock?
I believe it's $14 a month.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Supervisor Matt Haney's been working a lot on ways to keep the Tenderloin mm-hmm. cleaner since it's such a dirty neighborhood. And he's pushed for more collection of bins from inside people's garages mm-hmm. or, side yards or whatnot so they don't have to leave them on the street. And I saw the collectors last night going into a lot of homes mm-hmm. that way. What's your perspective on that? They said that it can also be problematic because people can follow them inside to try to break in.
I've heard those stories. Yes, we've met with Supervisor Haney's office, and he as well is very serious about making his district cleaner. And as a service brand in San Francisco, we want to do everything we can to help with that. Matt also did a ride along mm-hmm. with Bobby and Ron, and I think he had a very positive experience too. And inside service will work for some customers. It doesn't work for everyone. Mm-hmm. There are businesses that jewelry stores or restaurants who mm-hmm. don't want garbage men coming through on a rainy night, mm-hmm. Tracking, their boots through mm-hmm. their restaurants. We've been pushing inside service where possible, but we're seeing about half the customers that we ask that don't already have it don't want it at all. It really is a choice of the customer. Mm-hmm. I think a combination of expanded inside service and these new carts will do a lot to help.
Mm-hmm.
We're also changing the route times mm-hmm. in the Tenderloin, providing those customers with a window of time when we'll be there. So
a more specific time.
Exactly. Uh-huh. A 2-hour window so they know exactly when we'll be there so that their cans won't stay out all night. Mm-hmm.
Is it shifting to early morning, I think?
It is shifting to early morning, correct.
Okay.
Less traffic, the hope is that, we'll be able to get in and out of there in a few hours and the stores can open, have new fresh garbage cans and not have to worry that mm-hmm. way.
But people will still put them out probably at night, right, if it's early morning pickup?
It depends. There's, some businesses that are opening earlier, but one of the windows, I believe, is from 8 to 10. And mm-hmm. so, they might do it right when they get in.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might put them out at night. It's a possibility.
Okay. And this is the 10-year anniversary of San Francisco becoming the first city in the country to make composting mm-hmm. mandatory. A decade later, how do you think that initiative has gone, and have you seen other cities following our lead?
Yes. So as I mentioned earlier, that's the point of pride for us is our composting program. To go from kind of 300 tons a day when we first started to nearly 800 tons a day is a tremendous accomplishment. We get people from around the world coming to visit our facility, ask us questions about how programmatically we manage it. San Francisco is unique in the sense that I think we have a customer base that's really passionate about the environment, and mm-hmm. it's even becoming more topical today. I think we're very fortunate in that regard. Other places, like New York, for example, you see the articles. If you've been there, I was there recently, they put their bags on the street. Mm-hmm. They don't have garbage rooms. They don't have rooms for carts and containers. So that presents unique challenges.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're very fortunate to have kind of a a city that, that makes it possible as well as a population that supports it. So I would consider that one of our most greatest successes mm-hmm. right now.
And do you see that as being quite linked to climate change and something that regular people can do
yes.
about it?
I actually think, you know, composting is really under appreciated in its ability to trap carbon in the soil. You know, we've John Wick from the Marine Carbon Project has done a lot of great work in this area, putting compost on pasture lands, showing that it retains moisture. You know, California has been subject to droughts in the past. You know, if you compost naturally, you reduce the risk and need of watering your lands, as well as sequestering carbon, so it becomes a carbon sink. We'll actually keep carbon or bring carbon out of the atmosphere and keep it in the ground where it belongs. Mm-hmm. So I do think that is a huge success, and I think we need to do a better job of educating how impactful it can be and mm-hmm. positively for the environment.
What's the most common mistake you see people make when it comes to putting waste in the black, blue, or green bins? And what do you find that people are still confused about?
That is a good question. Let's see here. You know, loose film plastic is a really a big challenge for our recycling bins because—
Can you put them? I'm always confused about what you should do with the soft plastic.
So soft plastic should be put in a plastic bag, you know, basketball-sized plastic bag where we can capture it and keep it clean. But when you put it—
But in the blue bin?
In the blue bin. Mm-hmm. But when it's loose, it can get caught in our equipment. It's difficult to capture. Because it's so light, it has the attributes of paper. So if you mm-hmm. think about a piece of paper and a piece of a film plastic, our equipment treats it the same way, and we can get plastic in that paper, which is not what we want. Mm-hmm. And so we've invested to kind of prevent that from happening. Other areas that we've seen challenging, you know, on occasion, glass in compost is a challenge. We don't want that. It's just not good for the product, not good for the processing equipment, you know, and plastic in the compost as well. But overall, I would say San Franciscans actually do a very, very good job, mm-hmm. You know, to do the right thing. So.
And do you have to clean all plastic before you put it in the blue bin? Like a yogurt container, for example?
You know, I would focus, you know, what I do at home is, you know, pour a little water in it, shake the bottle, drain it out, and put it in. You know, if as long as it's not a significant amount, you know, in the container, and it won't spread amongst the other materials, you're fine. So shake it out, mm-hmm. get it as dry as you can, but don't waste a lot of water or time trying to make it perfectly clean.
Okay, good to know. The city has struggled to figure out a trash can, you know, for its sidewalks that mm-hmm. keeps waste inside and isn't easily broken into and rifled through. And the mayor likes the big belly cans, but Public Works doesn't. What do you think about what is the right can for our sidewalks?
Well, you know, I think Big Belly is a brand like Coke when it comes to like garbage containers, you know. So people refer to, you know, say Big Belly. I think they're really talking about a self-enclosed can that, mm-hmm. you know, people can't get into. And my preference is whatever works for that community, they should you know, invest in. I think the cost of a Big Belly is a little higher than I feel comfortable if I were in that, you know, a CBD or a BID mm-hmm. that was investing in that. I think there's probably other alternatives. But my most concern is really on the driver's side. You know, I want something that is easy to service. Right now, the city cans have liners. They have to lift those liners into the truck, dump mm-hmm. them into the truck. I would prefer something similar to the carts that you saw that they can just roll out with wheels on it, attached to our truck and service easily. Mm-hmm. That's my biggest, you know, need right now is something like that. You know, there's a lot of other options. Muhammad is piloting, Public Works is piloting a solar PEL is the brand. It's very similar to a Big Belly, but it's much cheaper. Mm-hmm. We're seeing pretty much the same outcomes with the Big Belly alternative. I think mm-hmm. that the idea is right. It just comes down to dollars and cents, what makes the most sense to invest in.
And we've touched on this a little bit, but I wanted to ask again. I think residents and tourists are always just wondering, why is San Francisco so dirty? Like, it just seems dirtier than most big cities internationally or in the elsewhere in the U.S. And when I was out last night, your guys are working so hard, collecting so much trash mm-hmm. from they were doing the black bins. But then you still see on the sidewalks just so much disgusting trash in the streets. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that – why is San Francisco so dirty?
Well – you know, maybe I have a different perspective. You know, I've lived in the city my entire life, fourth generation San Franciscan. I think, you know, I was just in New York a few weekends ago. I think there's a little overstatement on how actually dirty San Francisco is relative to a big city. And then there's parts of San Francisco like the Sunset and Richmond, which are kind of like suburban type environments, mm-hmm. where they're fabulously clean. I mean, it's beautiful. And then there's the higher traffic areas like the Tenderloin, like the Mission, like the Castro, like Stockton Street in Chinatown, mm-hmm. where you get a lot of people in a confined space and you get a windy environment, there's going to be a little litter. I actually think things have gotten better over the last year from my perspective and looking at just being in the city, being on the streets, looking at the 311 data. Mm-hmm. I do think we're having an impact with our partners at Public Works. I mean, we meet weekly talking about what city can has the most overflows, mm-hmm. and we'll adjust our service or collection frequency on those cans. And so if something's overflowing, like there's one on Ocean Beach, and it gets a lot of customers on a Saturday. Well, okay, we go there twice now. Maybe we should go a third time. Does it get back on our radar? Well, maybe we need to be there a fourth time. So we are adjusting real time to have a positive impact. I think there's a lot of hype around how terrible like the litter is. I don't see it being as different as people make it to be from other larger city environments. But that's one man's perspective.
I have to disagree with you on that.
All right.
Agree to disagree.
Fair enough.
Well, you've survived the serious questions, and now it's time for the lightning round. What is your favorite place in San Francisco to get a burrito?
That's a great question. I would say Gordo's on 9th and Irving.
Okay. That's a popular answer.
Is it? Okay, good.
What's your favorite movie filmed in San Francisco?
Oh, I'm thinking my cousin's going to want me to say The Rock.
That's a good one.
But I'm trying to think if there's anything better. I'll go with The Rock. That's not a final answer. I might elect to come back
revise.
To this question. Yeah.
Okay. What's your favorite place in the city to get a stiff drink?
Ooh. I would be remiss if I did not say the Philosopher's Club on West Portal.
Yes. Good one. What was your first concert?
I would say it was a Free Tibet concert with Rage Against the Machine and Golden Gate Park.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
What was the last book you read?
I am just finishing Call Sign Chaos by James Mattis.
Okay. What is the weirdest thing you've ever seen thrown in a Recology bin?
Well, that's interesting. We actually found a live mortar round about a year ago.
Wow.
Very large mortar round. We had the bomb squad come out and take care of that. So fortunately, no one was hurt, and it was.
Do you remember where that was found?
I don't remember. I know the truck it came in on, but we don't know where it came from.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Wow, I wasn't anticipating that answer. What is the strangest thing you've heard a garbage collector experience while on their route?
Wow. I've heard a lot of really great stories. Recently, I heard a driver tell about he found someone wrapped up in a piece of in a rug on the street, and he had to unfurl the rug to get the guy out, and the guy ran away. Don't know how or why he got there.
Was that in the Tenderloin?
I don't remember the place.
Probably. little kids love garbage trucks almost as much as fire trucks. What do you think is the appeal?
That is a great question. My two nephews love garbage trucks. I think there's an attraction to any piece of heavy equipment.
Mm-hmm.
We recently had a kind of family barbecue at Recology. And one of the things that we had as part of that was a antique truck tour where we took the families and their children on our old garbage trucks that you may have seen in the parades we have in the mm-hmm. city. And there was a line going out of the facility the entire barbecue.
Old is your oldest truck?
That is great. I think we have one from the 50s, Big Red,
mm-hmm.
and they loved it. People were going on it multiple times. We've got tractors, we've got bulldozers, we've got loaders, and the garbage truck. I mean, there's a detraction to heavy equipment.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Cool. Lastly, what is one thing you always make sure to squeeze into your busy day?
Well, you're gonna like this answer, reading the news.
That is a good answer.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Chronicle. Read it every single day religiously, first thing in the morning. Wake up around 4:35 in the morning, and that's the first thing I do with a cup of coffee every day.
Wow, that is the best answer we've ever had on this podcast.
Good. I'm glad to be to hear that.
Well, thank you so much for coming. It was fun to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you to John Porter for joining me today, to Karen Creighton for producing this episode, and to you for listening. San Francisco City Insider is part part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, please subscribe and give us a quick review wherever you get your podcasts. Support San Francisco City Insider and a lot of great journalism with a print or digital subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.